Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the National Advisor call for the Hennessy Cornerstone Mid-Cap 30 Fund. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host for today, Ryan Bowman. Ryan, please go ahead.
Thanks, Matthew, and good afternoon, everyone. As Matthew said, my name is Ryan Bowman, and I'm a sales director here at Hennessy Funds. I'd like to welcome you today to today's call featuring Ryan Kelly and Josh Wine, co-portfolio managers of the Hennessy Cornerstone Mid-Cap 30 Fund. Ryan Kelly brings over 25 years of investment experience to his role as Chief Investment Officer and Portfolio Manager at Hennessy Funds. He joined the firm in 2012 through the acquisition of FBR Funds and was promoted to CIO in 2021. Ryan began his career at FBR & Co. and was named to the FBR Funds Portfolio Management Team in 2005. Now, Josh Wine also brings over 25 years of investment experience serving as portfolio manager here at Hennessy Funds. And prior to joining the firm in 2018, Josh had served as Director of Alternative Investments and co-portfolio manager at Sterling Capital Management and as portfolio manager at Bellador Capital Partners. Ryan and Josh, I want to thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ryan.
Absolutely. And for those who aren't familiar with Hennessy Funds, we currently manage approximately $3.6 billion in assets across 16 different mutual funds and one ETF. We offer high conviction strategies, which can be leveraged as both core and satellite positions. So for today's call, we're going to be featuring our Hennessy Cornerstone Mid-Cap 30 Fund and really how consistently adhering to our investment process over the past two decades plus has meaningfully impacted client portfolios. The call will last about 25 minutes and be in a Q&A format. And I also want to thank everyone who submitted questions in advance as we try to include as many as possible in the call today. But before we get started, I do have one favor to ask for those near a computer screen. I encourage you to pull up Morningstar.com. I'll give you a second or two. Now, in that top left corner in the search bar, enter the ticker HIMDX. That's Harry India Mike Delta X-ray. Once the fund page loads, click the performance tab, and you're going to want to scroll down to the trailing returns table and make sure you're on the day end function. Now I want you to look at those percentile ranks across the 10 different time periods. And for those of you who don't have access to a computer right now, if you were to look at this table and those percentile rankings across the 10 different time periods, you'll basically see 1% in virtually 8 out of 10 of them. Really tremendous accomplishment, and I just wanted to kick things off that way. But for now, let's get started today with the first question. Over the 1, 3, 5, and 10-year periods ended 12/31/23, the fund ranked in the top 2% or better in its Morningstar category. Now, no other fund can make that same claim. So, Ryan, What's the secret behind the fund's outstanding performance?
Oh, sure. So I would say there actually is no secret, and that's the really nice part about this fund and many of the funds that we run here at Hennessy. This is a very transparent process. We use the Cornerstone funds. We use a formula-based approach to investing based on company fundamentals going back many, many years. It's called Fundamental Quant. These formulas are on our website. They're on the fact sheets. They're on SEC filings. They're everywhere. So we really want our investors to know what they're investing in and to know how we are investing. And as you mentioned, Ryan, this fund is over 2 decades old. It's 20 years plus old. And we've been using that exact same formula since day one, essentially. We were talking with a very smart investor yesterday, experienced, very intuitive, and he said to us, you know, one of the things about this fund is that you're investing in the process, not in the individual stocks in the fund. And that's what we really want to get across today in doing this call, is that Josh and I, our portfolio managers, Neil as well, we like to think of ourselves as the stewards of the process. This formula-based approach takes away a lot of the emotion of investing. And, you know, what this particular formula does for the MidCap 30 fund is we're trying to identify high-quality companies that are undervalued. Price to sales is our main valuation metric, which, to take a second here, it's an interesting valuation metric. Sales is probably one of the least able to be manipulated of all the lines on an income statement, and it allows us to get to a more pure number. We rebalance and reconstitute this portfolio every year, annually, and we like to wait at least 365 days plus a day because we don't want to generate any short-term gains, if possible, for our shareholders. And getting back to performance, yes, we're very happy with this performance. We're very happy for our shareholders who have been with us for a long period of time. But we realize performance can come and go. It can wax and wane. And each year is a different portfolio, the way that we do this. But I would say that over time, it's proven to work out pretty well.
Great. That's wonderful, Ryan. And I think kind of to expand on that, would you please describe the fund's investment strategy and objective?
Sure. Well, the objective of the fund is to invest in mid and small cap companies in a concentrated portfolio using this fairly strict formula-based investment process. We focus on what's worked over time and not just what's happening, you know, currently, what's the latest and greatest. The strategy looks to combine growth, momentum, and valuation in picking stocks. The way I like to describe this is it's like a giant funnel. So picture at the top of the funnel, you have over 5,000 companies as publicly traded on markets in the United States. We get rid of any ADRs. We want domestically based companies only. Then we look for companies that are trading between 1 and 10 billion in market cap, trading at a price to sales of less than 1.5 times, meaning we won't pay more than $1.50 for every dollar in sales. We're looking for earnings growth on a year-over-year basis. And then we look at companies that have positive stock price appreciation over the last 3 and 6 months. So that's where that momentum comes in. We then take whatever's left, and usually at that point there's somewhere between 75 and 100 companies. We rank them by the best one-year price performance, and the top 30 end up making it into the portfolio. So typically we'll see anywhere between 3 and 8 companies that stay in the portfolio from 1 year to the next. We call these keepers. We'll talk a little bit more about them as we go on. And we like to rebalance just once a year, as I said. And if a stock runs, we let it run. We won't sell it back as it moves up during a particular year.
Great. And, you know, kind of continuing along this theme, Josh, the Cornerstone MidCap 30 fund holds, as its name suggests, 30 stocks. So can you talk a bit about portfolio construction and what are the advantages of having a concentrated portfolio?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan, and thanks for everyone for tuning in. So the 30-stock portfolio, you know, to Ryan's point on not bringing emotion into the process, each stock is equally weighted, so it starts out at 3.3%. There are no constraints on sector exposures, either at the low or high end. And I think what, in effect, what we're doing is that this concentration that can result in sectors, and we'll talk about that later, it allows for a more idiosyncratic exposure profile, and we feel like that enables outperformance over time, and we have seen that in the fund's long history. And I'd also point out, in terms of diversification, you know, roughly 15 to 20 stocks brings you about 75%, you know, allows you to diversify away about 95% of the market risk in a portfolio. So, you know, there are portfolios that own many more stocks than we do, and there is a point of diminishing marginal returns in that approach.
Yeah, and continuing on there, Ryan, so the fund was recently rebalanced, and curious, what is the current composition of the portfolio, and how many stocks were kept in the portfolio as well?
Sure. The rebalance, we rebalanced it in the fourth quarter of last year. This fund is generally rebalanced in the winter. In the winter. It's now heavily concentrated in industrials, energy, and consumer discretionary. Industrials make up 35% of the portfolio, energy about 22%, and consumer discretionary about 20%. We don't have any holdings in utilities or healthcare or real estate. And this is actually kind of a typical positioning of the fund. We often see year over year, while there's some variation, we tend to get a lot of industrials. We tend to get a lot of consumer-related stocks. Energy comes and goes. This happens to be a time period when we have a lot of energy. We have three keepers from last year, ones that were in the portfolio last year and made it through the rebalance this year. Two of them are energy stocks, PBF Energy, which is a refiner, Plains Group Holdings, which is a midstream pipeline company. We have one industrial, EMCOR, which is a construction and engineering company. And all of these stocks did very well for the fund last year. And since we purchased, or since the rebalance, they're up about 20% so far since that time period.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. And, you know, clearly valuation, an important criteria in the selection process. So, Josh, what do valuations currently look like?
Sure. Yeah, as a baseline, I would just use the S&P 500, which is, I think, everyone's kind of go-to benchmark for the broad market. So right now, the S&P trades at about 20 times forward earnings with a 2.6 times price-to-sales ratio. And then at the one extreme is the NASDAQ, which, you know, people love to talk about, the Magnificent 7 or 5 or whatever it might be, trading at 30 times forward earnings at nearly a 4 times price-to-sales ratio. And so that's the extreme. You know, this is a smaller company portfolio. You know, our market cap range is on the smaller end. And, you know, the S&P 400 mid-cap index, as one example of a way to look at this universe, trades at about 15 times earnings. So it's nearly a 7% earnings yield, and the price-to-sales ratio is about 1.7. So, you know, we feel like, you know, smaller companies are both relatively and absolutely cheap. You have to go back about 7 or 8 years to find valuation metrics that are similar to what we have today. And I would just wrap up that question, you know, the likelihood of the Fed lowering rates rather than, you know, raising is quite high over the next 12 months. And if that is the case, I feel like there's a nice setup where, you know, risk assets, you know, equities look more and more favorable versus what investors are getting right now in a, you know, a savings account or even a checking account where you can earn, you know, anywhere from 3% at the low end to, you know, 5 or 5.5% on the high end. So I think that, you know, there is a rate story, but I think at the end of the day, on an absolute basis, you know, smaller companies are in the sweet spot.
Wonderful, wonderful, Josh. And, you know, given energy and industrials. What's the case for those, and given, you know, they're the most significant overweighted sectors in the portfolio?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, energy and industrials together comprise about 60% of the portfolio. And I think it should be noted that certainly the framework, the formula-based framework, you know, brings in these exposures. We are not deciding that we like energy, we like industrials. But given that we are exposed in those areas, I think it's important to note that what we've been led to in the case of energy is a group that trades at about 12 times earnings. You know, the price of these companies and even the underlying commodity, which is really oil, you know, seemingly doesn't reflect any kind of risk premium, you know, around geopolitical events. You know, there's a lot going on in the world, more than at most times, and it seems like investors are relatively complacent about its effect on the price of oil. So I think that, you know, the sentiment around energy is very poor and can only get better. And then industrials is a little bit different. It's about nearly 40% of the portfolio. And with our industrials exposure, largely, you know, it's a big theme around infrastructure and onshoring of manufacturing. So, you know, we saw a time when it was, you know, supply chains were stretched, and it's been decided, hey, we need to bring back, you know, whether it's chips or pharma, you know, we need to bring that back onshore. So there's a lot of, you know, as we speak, a lot of activity, you know, in building out, you know, domestic manufacturing, and a lot of the companies in the portfolio, and we can talk about it later, are right in the middle of that, you know, building out facilities, building data centers, you know, building infrastructure, bridges and tunnels and you know, highways and everything that goes with it, refineries. So, you know, it's an interesting, very thematic exposure, and I think one that we're happy to have.
Now, kind of dovetailing into this next one here, Ryan, but given higher inflation and higher interest rates, what is attractive about the consumer-related stocks in the portfolio?
Well, sure. We have seven consumer-related stocks. It makes up 27% of the portfolio. This is both consumer staples and consumer discretionary stocks. And just to sort of list them out so maybe, you know, people can kind of see what we're investing in, you know, what's worked well. There's four main sub-industries. There's three stocks are apparel retail, Abercrombie & Fitch, The Gap, and Guess. Two stocks are auto-related, Group 1 Automotive, which is a car dealership conglomerate, and Modine Manufacturing, which essentially manufactures auto parts. We have soft drink exposure. We have Coca-Cola Consolidated, which is the bottler, not Coke itself. And then we have food retail. We have Sprouts Farmers Market, which is a grocery chain specializing in natural and organic foods. So that gives you a flavor of what kind of consumer stocks we own. In general, I would say that these types of companies tend to be lower margin businesses driven by higher volumes. They're not necessarily the most dynamic stocks or you know, companies compared to what you might, other companies you might find in the market. But still, they can do well when you buy them at the right valuation. And that's why this formula and what we try to look for are companies that are trading at a pretty stringent valuation metric. So in fact, all seven of these consumer stocks, since we purchased them in the recent rebalance, fourth quarter of last year, they're up on average 62%. And two of them are up over 100%. And so these are consumer stocks that are moving like this. Modine is up 107%. That's the auto parts manufacturer. Abercrombie is up almost 30%. And that's really what's one of the most attractive things about this process is that we've seen over time that the formula tends to identify stocks or sectors which may be out of favor but have come off their lows and which may be about to take off. And that's happened time and time again. We saw that a long time ago with home builders. We saw that 3 years ago with energy. And we're seeing it right now with consumer stocks. And honestly, you know, adding these stocks just a little bit before the Christmas season, the holiday season, we didn't know Abercrombie & Fitch was going to go up 130% because they had excellent sales. But it's kind of what this process can lead you to.
Yeah, no, really appreciate that insight there, Ryan. And I mean, we've heard a fair amount of names already today, but Josh, could you please provide some examples of holdings in the portfolio?
Sure. Yeah, just to give some color to, you know, what the portfolio looks like, Ryan's mentioned some names. You know, industrials is a large exposure for the fund. I would point out two names, one of which has been mentioned, you know, EMCOR, which is in the facilities services area, doing HVAC work and electrical and as well as construction work in Square in the middle of the infrastructure boom and things like that. And then Floor. So Floor is a well-known infrastructure company building, you know, large, you know, classic infrastructure projects. They're now building data centers and chip factories and all of that. So very interesting diversified business starting to do well again. The energy exposure, you know, certainly we have several classic exploration and production companies that do well when oil goes up and all that are very exposed to the price of oil, but then also two midstream companies. So Plains GP and EnLink Midstream, which are both, you know, midstream pipeline companies that, you know, basically are living and dying off the flow of the liquids through the pipes. And that's been a strong story for obvious reasons and are great to have in the portfolio as a diversifier. Lastly, and this we've covered this, but I think it is interesting. The consumer discretionary kind of looks like a 1980s shopping mall. So we've got Gap and Guess and Abercrombie and Fitch. And, you know, we were talking earlier, a name like Guess, which is up about 20% since we purchased it, I think a lot of people didn't even realize, or at least I didn't realize, that it was still around. I mean, it was a huge name in the 80s. And I think that the process, as Ryan said, picks up some of these names that have been somewhat left for dead, at least in the minds of investors. You know, I think Gap as well, up about 70% since we first started purchasing it. I think that, you know, it would go without saying that, oh, well, why would you own Gap? And I think a lot of fundamental investors would say, no, there are better names out there. But, you know, I think that the disciplined approach that is taken in constructing the portfolio leads us to names like this, which is a great thing.
Great. And Josh, I'm going to go back to you again for this next one. And given the high level of cash, you know, we're seeing on the sideline and money market funds, you know, what is your case for these investors to allocate to smaller companies?
Sure. Yeah, I think there are a few things to note about small companies. You know, I think that first and foremost, there's a situation right now where there is a lot of cash, you know, on the sidelines. And I would first point to private equity, you know, kind of buyout money. So there's about $3 trillion in dry powder that's unlevered. So ultimately, that $3 trillion probably looks more like $5 or $6 trillion when it's put to work. And a lot of these companies, you know, in the portfolio and just smaller companies in general make great acquisition candidates. You know, I think they fly under the radar as it relates to antitrust, which this administration is certainly keen on enforcing and making sure that, you know, no one company gets too big. And I think that a lot of the names make perfect sense inside of a larger company. A lot of synergies, a lot of growth drivers there. And then I would also just say that small companies are likely underrepresented in people's portfolios. I think that liquidity is such a priority in so many people's portfolios. Smaller companies are a little bit less liquid. And I think that, you know, for those with a long time horizon, there's a lot of opportunity there. And I think that there could be a rebalancing that will occur, you know, hopefully at the end of this quarter where, you know, some of the names that have started to stumble a little bit in large cap tech, you know, people realize that that game can only last for so long. And I think there could be a rotation or a rebalancing toward, you know, smaller companies.
All right. And I'm going to ask Ryan to close this out here today. And it's somewhat of a tough one, but Ryan, if, you know, looking ahead to the rest of 2024, you know, what could drive the portfolio?
Well, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but, you know, the process drives the portfolio. That's first and foremost. It's our focus on valuation. We really want to look at, you know, quality companies that are trading at lower valuations. And then, you know, we're looking for companies with positive earnings growth that have caught some momentum that are moving in a positive way. If we stick with those stocks, and if something is moving, we hold it at least until the next yearly rebalance. a quick example of this, just to show you, like, you know, what could drive this portfolio is sometimes it's a contribution by one major company, you know. And last year, one of the major contributors was up almost 400% during the time that we owned it. That was Super Microcomputer. And at one point, it was 12% of the portfolio. So we let it ride. We let it push the portfolio higher. We held it for the full year, eventually sold it in the rebalance. But, you know, this is an example of when it was up 100% or 200% or even 300%, if it were my own personal portfolio, I may have sold it at that point in time. But by sticking with it, it really did well for the portfolio. So this year, what could drive the portfolio higher? You know, we think, and Josh mentioned this, that a more broad-based rally is probably due, or at least some of the sectors and stocks that we've seen starting to come back, as large cap tech completely outperformed, those will continue, potentially industrials, consumer stocks, financials has had a bump at least over the last 4 months. Movement in this type could certainly bode well for the fund. I'd say the wild card on the upside for the fund is energy. It's a very large exposure, as we talked about. And if we get an environment of higher oil prices, higher natural gas and commodity prices, higher consumption, we could probably see those stocks rise pretty dramatically. But again, overall, it's the process that drives the performance. It's the process that we focus on, and we hope that over time, you know, we are providing good returns and staying consistent. And that's what I think sort of the real value is in this type of a fund.
Well, with that, I want to both thank you, Ryan and Josh, for, you know, the really great insight behind the fund that you've been able to share with us today. And certainly thank you very much to the advisor and investment community who joined the call this afternoon. We certainly look forward to working with you and your consideration of the Hennessy Cornerstone Midcap 30 Fund for your clients' portfolios. For more information on the fund, please feel free to visit our website, HennessyFunds.com, or you can give us a call at 800-890-7118. Again, that phone number, 800-890-7118. Thank you all for joining, and I hope everyone has a great evening.
Thank you, everyone. This concludes today's event. You may disconnect at this time and have a wonderful day. Thank you for your participation.